prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we review underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm your co-host, Lance, joined by co-host Erica.
Hey, everyone.
So a couple of episodes ago, I had mentioned that I was watching a lot of Swedish films, specifically films that were included in this book I'd been reading, called Swedish Sensations Films, A Cladistine History of Sex, Thrillers, and Kicker Cinema by Daniel Ekroth. I highly recommend this book. It's published by Bazillion Points, and it covers so many underseen Swedish films, or at least underseen to American audiences.
Yeah.
Particularly those like that are notorious for like nudity and sexuality, drugs and violence. And the more popular sensation films out there include Thriller, A Cruel Picture, starring Christina Lindbergh, the Mods documentary trilogy, including They Call Us Misfits and A Respectable Life by Stefan Harrell, which I just watched both of those and they're fucking great documentaries.
Nice.
Totally recommend. And although Ingmar Bergman's films are understandably well known, The Virgin Spring is also covered in the book. Due to its intense depiction of rape and violence and how it arguably kicked off the whole rape revenge genre.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable to include that movie in there. Like, we wouldn't have Last House on the Left without that movie.
For sure. And when you think of Swedish cinema, I mean,
Bergman.
That's the first name.
Yeah, I did a... So for listeners, most of you know that we're based in Austin and we had a very traumatic week. When is this coming out next? So a couple weeks ago. And I mentioned, I think at one point about, you know, when I'm in a fucking mood, I just put on some Bergman and curl up and I watched like six Bergman movies that week.
Nice. That's a good medicine for if things are going bad.
Yes. Lean into your depression, folks. Don't listen to me.
So yeah, that Ekroth book, I recommend it. I've only had it for a few months, but I've kind of like already wearing out the spine because I just kind of pick it up here and there. That's kind of been my medicine the last couple of weeks because I bought that bundle book. And I'll probably pick another Swedish Sensation Films movie from the book and hopefully we can get the author on in a future episode.
Yeah.
So, but I too also dove into just like watching as many films as I can from the book. And I probably haven't even reached 10% of the films covered. Like I said, I just think so many are going to be great for a future podcast or just to talk about. And I actually picked one of the films, Mannequin in Red, as a double feature for the Argentinian Giallo Crystallize episode.
Mm-hmm.
And The Mannequin in Red is directed by Arne Mattsson. And today's episode is a film from the same director called Vax Dokken, or The Doll, from 1962. Vax Dokken actually translates from the Swedish word Vax Dokken to the wax doll. But, I mean, the title's obviously referring to a mannequin.
Yeah.
And as of this recording, Vax Dokken has 190 views on Letterboxd with a 3.4 rating. You can watch it on YouTube. And as I mentioned when announcing my pick last episode, it's probably more thriller than horror, but the ending is a total creep out, which kind of takes this black and white art house film to full on horror for me personally.
Yeah.
And okay, I'm going to spoil the full film in my summary, but even if you listen to this before watching it, you'll still be really surprised with your first viewing, and you should watch it. Only 190 views on Letterboxd. That's just wrong.
Get on people. It, people.
Okay, so here we go. Vax Dokken. We start off with Lundgren, a lonely night watchman, just off his overnight shift, walking the bustling streets of the city early in the morning. He's thinking to himself, lamenting his loneliness, upset that no one cares about him, how everyone else has someone waiting for them, and yet no one wants him. He heads home to sleep all day, and when he gets into the building where he lives, we meet a few of the numerous tenants, Mr. Fredrickson and a young woman who he's having an affair with. Lundgren goes to his room, lays down in his bed, thinking how empty his place is, and that he has no one to talk to. He stares up at the water-stained ceiling above his bed until the stains form a woman's face who he has been dreaming about for so long. Here we see the first image of the woman we will come to meet. That night, Lundgren heads off to work and sees two shadowed figures have broken into the department store where he's a night watchman, and one of the mannequins has fallen over. He walks over to the mannequin, and we see that its face is that of the woman he dreams about. Lundgren calls the police to report the burglary, and he quickly grabs the mannequin and takes her outside to hide her in a storage cellar of some kind. He waits for the police to arrive, and he tells them that he saw two men run off with the mannequin. And he's muttering to himself how beautiful the mannequin or the doll was. As the police leave, Lundgren covers the mannequin and swiftly heads to his place with her in his arms. When entering his building, he sees a little kid heading down the stairs with a bowl of water to feed his pigs in the basement, which is where Lundgren is hiding at that time with his mannequin. The boy's mother calls him up, and Lundgren runs up the stairs to his room and places his doll on the bed. But he sees that her hand is missing, and he realizes that it fell off in the basement, where the little boy is now back to feed his pigs. The boy sees the hand on the ground, screams, and runs off telling tenants that there are chopped up corpses in the basement and blood all over the walls. The tenants think the boy is crazy, and he gets his second slap in the face of the night. And as the kid is getting his ass kicked, Lundgren has casually picked up the hand, returned to his room, and snaps it back into place on his mannequin, kissing her, covering her with the blanket, and wishing her a good night. The next morning, we meet the lonely landlady, Mrs. Carlberg, who has a disfigured face, like half of it looks burned. And she's talking to a tenant named Mrs. Linde, who apparently can't control her cats. Lundgren is back in his room with fresh flowers for his new lover, melting wax on his stove to fix her severed hand, while telling her how happy she makes him. As he's applying the wax, we hear her speak for the first time, saying, "Ouch." The next morning, Lundgren heads home after work to have morning coffee and cookies with his new lover, while confiding to her how people think he's nothing and they would find him mad if he was seen with her. He keeps saying, "If only you were alive, then we would show him." He pleads for her to move just a little. As he talks more about himself being nothing, he hears her laughing. While he loudly tells her not to laugh at him and love him instead, Mr. Fredrickson and his young mistress are listening through the walls in the next room, curious if the lonely Lundgren has a woman in his room. Lundgren kisses his doll goodnight, and we see her move for the first time, placing her hand on the back of his head, then turning to look at him and blink. She reaches up and pulls him towards her for another kiss, and Lundgren starts laughing uncontrollably, going mad with happiness. The next morning, the mannequin wakes up and begins to talk to Lundgren. She's happy with him and the place that they live, although Lundgren talks about getting a better house and buying her nice things. During the conversation, landlady Mrs. Carlberg knocks on the door to ask for her rent, which freezes up the mannequin, and she stops talking. And on his way to work that evening, he meets another tenant in the stairway who tells him that that being married sucks, and that women just want things like jewelry and TVs. Lundgren thinks about stealing a bracelet from the shop at night after hearing this, but doesn't, and luckily sees a woman getting into a taxi drop her bracelet, which he pockets and takes home to his doll as a gift. She loves the bracelet, and he says he wants to give her things so that she won't leave him. He tells her he must go back to work, but she tells him to stay and that no one will miss him, that she is the only one who will miss him. So he goes to the landlady to borrow her phone and calls him to work, saying he's ill and needs a few days off. Mrs. Carlberg is worried about him, and being lonely herself, we can see that she has feelings for Lundgren. But back in his room, Lundgren tells his mannequin how his boss was very understanding and was told that he's very valuable to the company. The mannequin starts to become jealous as Lundgren seems happy with his boss and his connections to his job. And he seems pleased that she's jealous out of the love for him. And he turns on the radio and begins dancing like Crispin Glover from the final chapter. And as he's dancing, he's just yelling with happiness very awkwardly. And the music and the yelling brings the landlady to knock on the door, which in turn makes the mannequin beat back on the door. She's beating on the door, yelling, saying she wants to be free in the world among the people and that she wants them to come into the room to see her. Mrs. Carlberg is listening and seems to hear only Lundberg talking, telling his lover to stop. He's upset and doesn't understand why his mannequin would do that, as people would take her away if they came in and found her. And we see the first quarrel between them. Lundgren puts a pot of coffee on the gas stove and he falls asleep. And the kid in the building smells the gas and yells that Lundgren has gassed himself to death. An attendant breaks into Lundgren's room and turns off the gas, waking Lundgren and asking if he's all right. As they're talking, the kid sneaks into the room and sees the mannequin under the covers, yelling that Lundgren has killed someone. The man tells the kid to get out, and they both leave Lundgren alone. He runs to his mannequin, apologizing that someone almost saw her and that he's a coward. She's not responding, and he lets her know that he will show her to everyone to prove his love for her and let her live her life. He runs out to buy her a fur coat as the tenants talk in the stairway about how crazy Lundgren is. When they see him and ask how he's feeling, Lundgren says he's great and that he's going to buy a fur for his lady who is now living with him. When Mrs. Carlberg, the landlady, asks what her name is, Lundgren can't answer as he's never asked her name. As Lundgren runs out to get a fur coat, Mr. Fredrickson and his young lover breaks into his room and the young girl steals the bracelet from the mannequin. Lundgren returns with the fur coat and his lover becomes upset that the fur is a fake, like everything else about him. She tells him that he has nothing to give but loneliness and emptiness. Lundgren begins to break down, crying, and then notices that her bracelet is missing. He thinks that she invited another man in while he was away, and immediately thinks of Fredrickson. Lundgren bursts into Mr. Fredrickson's room and demands the bracelet from the young girl who was wearing it in bed. Fredrickson tells Lundgren that she's keeping the bracelet and that that Lundgren will be placed in a loony bin if he calls the police. Fredrickson returns to Lundgren's room and starts tapping on the mannequin, saying how unnatural this is, and Lundgren can hear her pleading to help her. Fredrickson leaves, and the mannequin begins crying as Lundgren asks her to forgive him. He then realizes that she wants him to take revenge for what has happened. He loads a gun and goes after Fredrickson, who is left to his country house. Lundgren goes to his house, shoots him through a window, and runs off. Fredrickson survives the shooting, being grazed in the arm, and immediately goes to Mrs. Carlberg, the landlady, to tell her that Lundgren is insane. All the tenants, including Carlberg, break into Lundgren's room and find him in bed with the mannequin. Lundgren is very inviting and tells him to come in. He introduces them to his new lover, and he tells her to tell the others how much she loves him. But she remains quiet, and Lundgren is enraged and destroys her, picking her up and smashing her to the ground, calling her a false whore. He smashes her body, breaking all her limbs and torso, and her head remains on the floor, staring up at him. Lundgren becomes worried that he killed her and collects her body into a suitcase and throws it into the river. He returns home, opens the door to his room to find his doll sitting up in his bed. He screams in terror as she tells him, "You will never get rid of me. I cannot die without you." The end. So it's very weird. It's very art housey. I kind of broke down most of the important elements, but it's a hell of a watch. Okay, before I get into the cast and crew, I just want to apologize beforehand for all the mispronunciations of the Swedish filmmakers and actors' names. Okay. I knew beforehand that picking the Swedish film was not going to make me look like well-cultured or smart or anything because I have no idea how to properly pronounce or enunciate these things. So I'll do my best. And all the Swedish movie titles, I'm just going to go with the translated English titles.
Okay.
So the director of Vaxdokken is Arne Mattsson. And I had never watched any of his films before reading Swedish Sensations films, Ekeroth's book. But he was well recognized by critics and audiences, starting with his directorial debut in 1944, which was a drama called And All of These Women. But Mattsson's popularity grew in 1952 with arguably his most popular film called One Summer of Happiness, which kickstarted the entire Swedish Sensations films era, as it included a bare breast, which was considered extremely daring in the early 50s. I watched this one, and while there's nudity, it's just kind of like a film with a great love story, but it does have a dark and like very sad ending.
Okay.
Mattsson's films actually grew darker as his career went on, which turned off some critics and audiences, but he directed The Great Mannequin in Red in 1958, which is considered to be a precursor of Italian giallo. And it was the second of five films he directed called the Hillman Thrillers, which follows a crime-solving couple called the Hillmans. And they were all written at the time by a popular Swedish crime writer. His name was Carl Folke Melvig. Mattsson directed Vaxdokken in 1962. And in the late 60s and 70s, he directed his more extreme films, The Moors in 1965, a tense murder mystery called The Murderer, a Completely Normal Person, in 1967, the sex thriller Anne and Eve in 1970, and his violent Dirty Fingers in 1973, about a woman dying from a drug overdose, and her friends and family try to find out who supplied her with the drugs. Dirty Fingers has a ton of disturbing scenes, including rape, torture, abuse, prostitution, and just like needless death, which Mattsson claims the inspiration and elements of the story and scenes were taken from authentic police reports.
Dirty Fingers?
Dirty Fingers.
All right, adding it to my watch list.
Yeah, I couldn't find that one, but I do want to see that. So Arne Mattsson started to lose audiences with his films as they grew darker, and critics altogether hated him at this point. And he only worked occasionally later in his career, directing low-budget films like Mask of Murder in 1985, starring Christopher Lee and Rod Taylor. The Girl in 1987, starring Franco Nero.
Hey, who
plays an attorney who sleeps with a 14-year-old schoolgirl.
Oh, never mind.
I couldn't find this one, but it is in my watch list. And then in the last few years of Mattsson's life, his name was linked to a no-budget and what some would consider no-talent, especially author Daniel Ekeroth. But he was a no-talent action director named Mats Helge Olsen, getting co-director credits to his Mad Bunch, starring David Carradine, and Hired Gun, both released in 1989. Hmm. Mats Helge Olsen directed a few well-known, so-bad-they're-good films called The Ninja Mission in 1984, Blood Tracks in 1985, and Russian Terminator in 1989.
Did you watch Blood Tracks?
I did. I loved it. So good. And I'm a sucker for like 80s hair metal bands, and that's all it's about. So yep. I'm pretty sure that might be the pick for a future episode, but we'll see.
Woo!
Mattsson passed away at the age of 75 in 1995. And while he did die with little fanfare, he is considered a pioneer and a hero in the world of Swedish sensations films. I ended up watching about six of his films. I mean, two of them were with Mats Helge Olsen. Mm-hmm. And they're all really great. The Mats Helge Olsen movies are so cheesy, but I would still recommend them because they're just kind of fun train wrecks with horrible acting.
Okay.
Okay, so the producer of Vaxdokken was a Lawrence Marmsted. He was a film and theater producer who founded the production company Terrafilm, which included a new generation of Swedish filmmakers, including Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah.
Marmsted has a few directing credits from the 1930s, but he produced over 50 films, including a lot of Arne Mattsson's movies, and Bergman's Prison from 1949, which apparently helped Bergman move forward as a filmmaker. There was a quote on the internet from Bergman about Marmsted saying, "It was he who taught me to make film." So he's very important in Swedish cinema. Vaxstocken is written by Eva Seberg and Lars Forssell. Seberg wrote the screenplays to two other Arne Mattson films, Lend Me Your Wife in 1959 and It's With Me He's Been in 1963. And Forssell co-wrote Ingmar Bergman's The School of Wives in 1983. Okay, the cinematographer, I'm going to butcher his name because it's like an A with cool, you know, symbols over it. But Vaxstocken was photographed by cinematographer O.K. Dockfist, and he filmed a ton of films by Gustav Molander. I'm not really going to get into like all the other crew, cast and crew, because I don't recognize a lot of their movies. Swedish films are still new to me, and also I'm just going to kill their names.
Fair.
The composer, Ulrich Neumann, did the original score, which is pretty creepy in this movie. Only other films that he did scores to were Danish comedies called Kispis and The Hullabaloo at the Castle. And I will get to the cast now. And this film definitely, to me, feels like a one-man show.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Jack Nicholson and The Shining thing, but, you know, there are still other great performances from all cast members. And I guess there are really only about five main characters, so that's who I'll go over here. The lead character, Lundgren, the Lonely Night Watchman, who steals the mannequin, is played by Swedish actor Per Oscarsson. He's best known in the 1966 Danish drama Hunger, directed by Henning Carlsen, a film considered to be a masterpiece of social realism. He also played roles in the more recent Swedish films The Girl Who Played with Fire and The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest from 2009.
Okay.
I never saw those.
I read the books. I didn't see the movies, though. Or maybe I might have seen the first one. I don't remember it. The books were good.
That's good. So Oscarsson has hundreds of film credits as an actor, including The Night Visitor, directed by Laszlo Benedict, and Anthony Mann's A Dandy in Aspic. And I love Anthony Mann. So I'm going to seek that one out. Hmm. The title character, the doll, is played by Gio Petre, who was in a ton of Mattson films, including Mannequin in Red, Anne and Eve, and Rider in Blue. And she had a part in Bergman's Wild Strawberries. She was also in the romance drama Loving Couples in 1964, which I kind of want to check out because it had really good reviews. Mm. Tor Isdahl plays Mr. Fredriksson, the man who's sleeping with a young girl. He's in a lot of Bergman movies, The Seventh Seal, Virgin Spring, A Dream Play, and Rabies. And Marie-Louise Nordgren plays Annie, who's the young woman sleeping with Mr. Fredriksson. I don't think they ever mention her name in the movie, but I just call it the young woman.
Yeah, I don't remember it either.
And then Elsa Prowitz plays the disfigured Ms. Carlberg, the landlady. She's another Arne Mattson actor. She was in, I think, seven of his movies, Mannequin in Red, Moriana, Murder, A Completely Normal Person. So those are kind of like the main cast members. There's other tenants that pop up throughout the story, but that's pretty much the full cast and crew of Vaxstocken.
We'll get into more of the film right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so there's a lot of elements as we were talking about. This movie overall is just about different looks at sad and lonely people. I mean, that's kind of all I got out of it.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously the main focus is on Lundgren and his loneliness. And I think that's going to be the majority of what we talk about here. But it's also highlighted or supported by the landlady who, Mrs. Carlberg, she's very lonely as well. The husband, who's one of his neighbors, who basically tells him, you know, oh, marriage, blah, blah, blah. It's, you know, women are greedy and that's the only reason they want a husband. And
you're very lucky to, you know, come and go as you please.
Exactly. Yeah. Alone. He's like, oh, marriage is, no, don't do it if you don't have to. This is the only reason. And by having that, I guess, sort of contrast, because, you know, Lundgren wants someone, he wants a partner, but he's having this other person tell him no. Well, eventually what that husband, the married guy, tells him about women being greedy and they just want, eventually the doll turns into that because that seed's been planted in Lundgren's brain.
Right. There's clear signs that that the tenants and the world around him are kind of driving his narrative. Like, he starts off wanting love because he thinks it's the best thing in the world. He thinks as a lonely person, that's what will make him happy. So when the doll first comes to life, you know, she says stuff like, I like the way you look. You look like you should. Whereas he, you know, finds himself kind of, I forgot what he called himself, kind of like quirky looking, like a sparrow or something. Mm-hmm. And then when he speaks to, you know, that tenant in the hallway about having, you know, all he wants refrigerators and TVs, then he comes home. And the next time he sees the doll, that's when she starts wanting things like, you know, fur coats and bracelets and more stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see that. Obviously, this is all in Lundgren's mind, but it's being driven, like, the narrative of his relationship, his fake relationship, is being conducted by people who are telling him about their own personal experiences.
Right. But I mean, but how it initially starts, you know, Lundgren is fully in the projecting driving seat. Like, he's shaping her into the woman he wants. Like, even from something like talking about the coffee, where he says, oh, you like your coffee strong like me. And she says to him, obviously in his head, I'll stay here in your apartment and you tell me about you. You know what to give me and what I want. And it's all about him. And he never asks her anything about her, including her name, which you mentioned in the summary. Like, she never gets a name because that's not important to him.
Yeah. It is about him and his happiness, like, when it all starts out. But yeah. And I think, Per Oscarsson, who plays Lundgren, I mean, it's not necessarily, I mean, I think he puts on an amazing performance. Like, I could see why he's in hundreds of films as you know, he's a known, very well-known Swedish actor. But it's not necessarily his performance that's so well done. It seems to be like the realistic writing in the script and how they make him sadly relatable. Like,
yeah,
writers Seberg and Forsell, like, write this tight screenplay, like the scene where he's laying in his bed and seeing a face and the stains and textures in the ceilings. I feel like everybody's done that in their life, not necessarily like seeing a lover or anything, but just, you know, making out weird faces and stuff. And he's written really well, and you immediately see how obsessive he is to find love from the very opening. So yeah, it's just a great performance, a really perfectly written character, in that he just kind of delivers what's written in the screenplay so well. It makes me sad
that it turns out the way it does. Yeah, I agree. Like, when it starts off, you're sympathetic. You're like, oh, I want him to find somebody and be happy, even though it sucks. Like, your happiness should not depend on you being in a relationship. That's a whole other therapy can of worms that, you know, I'm not going to open. But him starting off that way, you're sympathetic to him. You're like, oh, he's likable. But you see, like, as his quote unquote relationship with the doll, you know, progresses and goes further along, he becomes less and less likable and more, you know, you mentioned like the Crispin Glover vibes when he's dancing. I, you know, there's heavy Norman Bates vibes with this guy. Oh, yeah. He's very sort of, you know, average looking, and he even communicates almost in the same way I do imagine that the actor has seen Psycho because it was just a couple years before and probably took some notes from Anthony Perkins in his line delivery because he gives off that vibe so heavily. And by the end, especially as a woman watching this and thinking like, God, this guy is just, he's happy. Like he's so happy having a doll because he can make it into whatever he wants it to be.
Right.
Until like he starts like you mentioned, like the neighbors start influencing his relationship narrative and it starts creating conflict, but also because it's all in his head, this is also, you know, he's thinking, well, this is what the neighbor told me is normal for marriage. So I need to insert this conflict into my relationship with my doll.
Yeah. He's creating the relationship that he thinks is real, like what everybody goes through based on what everybody's telling him. But yeah, the Norman Bates vibe is because, yeah, it's just like he's so alone that he doesn't quite know how to react just to certain situations or very normal situations. Like the scene where he attempts to go shopping for women's clothing. He runs out of the shop when the saleswoman begins trying to show him bras, you know, like, you know, they're kind of teasing him, but at the same time, he has no idea how to react in a situation like that. One of my favorite scenes is when he was melting the wax to fix her hand that fell off. Mm-hmm. And when he's applying it, you can feel and just hear like it hurts her. He's like, no, it'll be all right. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, he's so devoted to this doll and this relationship that, yeah, he thinks that she can feel pain. I mean, obviously he thinks that she's real.
Yeah. I think eventually though, it's after the conflict with with Fredrickson when he tells him, well, you're not going to go to the police about the bracelet because otherwise, you know, they're going to take you away because obviously you're crazy. It's not until Fredrickson says that to him that Lundgren actually admits that to himself and to the doll. He said, like, he's now he knows this whole situation is crazy, but yet he's not yet going to change anything. He says like, oh, if they come in, they'll take either you, the doll, or me away. So there's some sort of acknowledgement of how ludicrous the situation is, but also at the same time, still trying to maintain it.
Right. That the whole back and forth of how he reacts to the relationship and to her is really just like terribly sad because he doesn't want anybody to see her because he knows that, you know, either she'll be taken away or everybody will think he's just crazy. Mm-hmm. But then he finally opens up saying, you know what? You know, he starts hearing her saying that she wants to go out into the world and be with people. So he starts accepting that at first, you know, after denying it at first. And now he's saying, okay, I'm going to show everybody how much we're in love. I don't care, you know, what they think. I just want to make you happy. And it'll be, you know, it'll keep me happy because it's just really sad. He's just finding a way to make him feel happy, but others in the outside world are kind of interfering with his happiness in a weird and just creating these negative narratives in his mind. And then you have Mrs. Carlberg, who kind of feel like she accepts her loneliness,
yeah,
and, you know, her physical imperfections, but she's angry at, she still has an angry tone, you know, with her tenants. She's kind of very forceful with her tenants. And mm-hmm. She's angry, but sane, but she seems both irritated and sad about Lundgren. I mean, she has some great lines at the end when he's kind of breaking down. She says that it would be so much better if a person could just accept her unhappiness, yeah, you know, referring to herself. I think she's actually looking at a doll that's hanging on her mirror.
Yeah.
And she's like, because everyone is in fact alone, no matter how much they try to pretend they are together.
Yeah. This movie fucking hit hard this week.
It did.
After the whole fucking winter storm outage bullshit, I was like, oh God, this is rolled in a ball and kill myself. I'm alone.
I mean, the one line that really got me is when all the tenants break in at the end and that's when Lundgren finally says like, hey, this is my, you know, my lover, say hi, you know, and that's when he starts freaking out and getting upset that she's not replying, but It's the first time he admits the relationship to everybody and shows her to the world. And then one of the tenants, the crazy cat lady, she just kind of leans in. And Mrs. Carlberg says something like, "I can't believe this. He's with a doll." And she, you know, quietly says, "But we're the ones who intruded." And I'm like, ah, you know, his, it seems like his world was falling apart, you know, regardless of them coming in or not. But it's true. It's like, let him be happy. He can do what he wants with his doll. You know, just everybody get off his fucking back.
I mean, I feel a lot of sympathy, though, for Mrs. Carlberg, despite like them breaking in and her sort of disgust at the situation. Because I think a lot of her disgust is justified, because it's clear that she does have some feelings for Lundgren. And most I'm assuming that he didn't even look at her as a possibility because of her disfigured face. And so if you're someone who is enamored with someone, and maybe you're not making it clear, and that's partially your fault, but you know, if you're thinking, wow, this person's lonely, I'm lonely, we should get together, it's like, oh no, he's got a fucking mannequin instead. Right. Like, I'm not good enough. I'm a real living human person, but because I'm disfigured and not up to his Lundgren sort of ideal woman persona, I'm not even an option to him. So I think she's perfectly justified in being angry, but crazy cat lady too. It's like, yeah, don't, you know, don't worry about what other people do in their homes.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like everybody's perspective, you can just kind of, you know, shake your head in agreeance. That's what makes all these characters so great. I mean, it's like, oh, that's a good perspective of it. You know, they kind of bring every single look at being lonely. I mean, and kind of, you know, fighting for what's different or what brings you happiness, or, you know, just all these different looks that make it really interesting.
Yeah. I also really liked, related, unrelated, because it is about Lundgren and sort of being a man child, is that nursery rhyme song at the beginning and the end.
Yes. Yes. That I didn't bring that up in the summary, but yeah, it's the opening and closing song. And the song is called "The Ballad About the Man and the Doll." At least that's what it translated to when I pulled it off the credits. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find it. I found it online. I found the scene online, but it's just this creepy, it's a great opening song that kind of foreshadows the entire film in the lyrics. Cause it has like this little girl bouncing her ball against a wall that has a chalk drawing of like a man, and she's inside a house. And the lyrics is like about an unhappy man growing up, crying for his mother all his life. And there is a scene where his mother's pictures, her framed picture is on his bedside. But as soon as he brings the mannequin home, he just puts it in the drawer.
Yeah.
But he's in the lyrics, she says like never becoming sane and playing with dolls his whole life. And there's nothing. And there's something really, really wrong with grown men who play with dolls. And if his doll fell apart, he would too. That was like in the opening song, and it's very, very creepy. And that kind of sets the tone for the whole, that's brings that horror element to the movie for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the other things, I'm skipping to the ending, but we don't necessarily have to like end with the ending, but when he cuts up he breaks the mannequin and is like shoving the pieces of the mannequin, aka her, also her body, into luggage, and then he takes it down to the river and throws it in there. It's full on psycho at that moment. Psycho, the movie, not just psycho as in psychotic, because it's just like that moment in Psycho where the car is being pushed into and then it stops for a second and Bates has that like moment.
Yeah.
And the luggage takes a little while to like, to go down, but there's this sort of underlying humor to it because there's no stakes involved with this. It's like, it's a fucking mannequin. Like, you're not going to get in trouble for this. Like, if anything, you're going to get a ticket for littering.
Yeah. That was another scene where it's like, he's just all over the place. Cause he knows he's smashing a doll, but then he realizes, oh my God, I just killed this woman.
Yeah.
And he tries to hide the body, but you're right. It's just plastic and wax, and it's sad. It's just sad.
It's sad, but very, very good.
It's very good. Yeah. And Mattson, Arnie Mattson just directs the hell out of this with like some of the camera angles, especially in that old building where all the tenants are living. There's a bunch of great scenes of just like, you know, people walking up and down that staircase and just these great angles and the way that it's built up while we wait for the mannequin to come to life. But it's just super quick pacing. I mean, it doesn't take long for you to realize what's happening. Mm-hmm. But there are cuts in the beginning where Lundgren will say something or do something and we expect a reaction from, you know, a real person. So the camera will kind of cut to the doll's face and kind of do a close up on the mannequin's eye, but it's just this, you know, mannequin. And you kind of are almost like envisioning or creating your own. You can see already reactions and expressions coming to life before she even does, which kind of sets up the reveal of her coming to life even stronger.
Yeah.
And then the effects are great too, because the mannequin looks exactly like the actress. Like they did a great job plastering them. There's points where you can't really tell what's real and fake with, maybe it's the black and white and stuff, but
yeah,
everything looked really good.
I mean, but like, if there, you know, if there's an option to shoot in color, it's a very smart decision to shoot it in black and white for that, because it masks that difference between the two and makes that line between living and plastic all the more blurred.
Yeah, it's way more effective than Kim Cattrall and her as a mannequin in the 1987 movie.
I'm going to be honest, I haven't seen Mannequin since it was on video in the late 80s. So, maybe I saw it on TV at some point after that, but I watched like the trailer for it recently and I was like, dude, this fucking mannequin in Vax Dawkins is way better than that one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I love Kim Cattrall, but, yeah, I saw that movie once, I think, in my life. It's just the song. It's Starships, Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now. That's the mannequin song.
You can't name a song without singing it, Lance.
Nothing's going to stop us now.
Thank you. That was for Wonder Bros.
There you go. But yeah, and also Mrs. Carlberg's makeup too. I mean, obviously, yeah. I thought there was an option to shoot in color, what was it, 62? I mean, mm-hmm. I guess there was.
Yeah.
But it's just way more effective. And just that dark building that everybody lives in, that kind of almost adds to the sadness to everybody involved. The black and white is just, I love black and white.
Yes. So good.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else. That's my notes. Recommendations?
Recommendations, Letterboxd ratings. What did you think of it, Erica? What'd you give it on Letterboxd?
So I gave this 3.5 out of 5 on Letterboxd, plus little heart. I think it's just one of those movies that, you know, you already said it in the beginning, only 119 people have logged it, and 90. So it's just, it's one of those where people just maybe haven't heard of it. And I hopefully this makes a few more people watch it, because I think it's a great watch and you'll be reminded of horror movies that you already are familiar with, but this tells its own story very well on its own, even if those references don't stand out for you.
Yeah. I gave it the same rating, 3.5 with the heart. This was the first movie I think I watched from that book that I was reading. Mm-hmm. And it just made me that much more excited to dive into more of the films that are covered in it, because I was completely into it right away. I've since watched like 5 other Arnie Mattson's movies. And like I said before, they're all fun to watch. His earlier ones are like, it's more black and white. It's like One Summer of Happiness, Mannequin in Red. Mannequin in Red's actually filmed in color, but those have just really stood out way more, early in his career, and he's really kind of knocking him out of the park every single time. But I can't wait to kind of revisit more of his movies that I can try and get my hands on, especially The Girl with Franco Nero.
Yeah.
But
I'll find it and send it to you.
Okay, cool. I totally recommend this movie and really any Arnie Mattson movies at this point.
What about Double Feature? What would you pair this with?
Double Feature. So I had a few in mind, but I'm just going to go with one of my favorite slashers of all time. And that's Bill Lustig's Maniac from 1980. So aside from the obvious fact that there are mannequins in both Maniac and Vagstocken, Maniac focuses on the extremely awkward and alone Frank Zito, played brilliantly by Joe Spinell, who's one of my favorite actors. He died way too young at 52, but
yeah,
I think everybody knows Mannequin. He scalps women, takes their hair home, and he places them on mannequins whom he kind of creates relationships with. And I wanted to pair a straight up horror with Vagstocken, as they're both kind of psychological horror elements in both movies, with mannequins coming to life in the end. I feel like they just make a great double pairing. I'd go Vagstocken first, followed by Mannequin, because you got to close out the evening of Joe Spinell getting his head ripped off by vicious mannequins. Spoiler alert.
Who hasn't seen Maniac? Come on, people.
Yeah. What about you?
Okay, so my double feature theme is Gentlemen Prefer Plastic. Nice. The name of the movie that I would put this, I would program second, is called Grandeur Nature, or Life Size, from 1974. It's a Spanish film directed by Luis Garcia Berlanga. It stars Michael Piccoli. He's in a lot of Buñuel films. And the main character, played by Piccoli, he orders, and it's like right at the beginning, like you're at the shipping yard with this character picking up the sex doll that he ordered from China. And so immediately he brings it home, he's talking to it, and he's starting to treat it like a real woman. And by treat, I mean treat like shit. But he also dresses her up, takes her with him in public, and his mom is actually introduced to the sex doll and is very accepting of it. So cheers to the mom for not kink shaming. And obviously he also has sex with it because, you know, duh, it's a sex doll. But I think that this would pair really well with Vagstocken in that it's also about a man seeking to fulfill his own needs through an inanimate woman who's not going to challenge what he projects on her, but that doing so eventually drives them mad. And so I'm not sure if this needs a trigger warning, but there is a sex doll gang rape in Life Size. So just FYI. I did have to download this one, but if anyone's interested in watching it, message us and I can email you a copy of it. So nice. Yeah, it comes up under, yeah, if you search Life Size, it didn't come up, but it's Grandeur Nature, basically, but Nature.
Just Google Life Size sex doll and image search it. And come up.
Yeah, good times. So. All right, so Maniac or Grandeur Nature for a double feature with Vagstocken. I like it. All right, so next episode. So we recently did a guest spot on the Schlock and Awe podcast, and we discussed a double feature of Tobe Hooper's Eaten Alive and Dark Age. And I talked a bit about my favorite Jaws ripoffs. So in that vein, we're going to be discussing a ripoff of another popular movie, The Exorcist. So next episode is Demon Witch Child, aka The Possessed. This is from 1975 and is directed by Amando de Osorio. That sounds familiar. He did all of the Blind Dead movies. And so Demon Witch Child is about a witch who possesses the daughter of a politician that threw her in jail in order to seek vengeance. I'm not going to go too far into the plot because I went into this blind and I had a great time with it. I will say, though, that one of the main reasons I picked it, besides having a good time with it, is, no surprise, baby murder. This is available to watch on both Prime and Tubi for free. And we're also going to have another guest for that episode, Laird Jimenez. He is the programmer and host of Weird Wednesdays at Alamo Drafthouse here in Austin. He also writes the best reviews on Letterboxd, so you should follow him if you're on there. Lance, I think you even read his review of Manhattan Baby when we did a Junesploitation episode last year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few people on Letterboxd. If I'm either looking at a movie that I haven't watched before, or sometimes as I'm watching the movie, I'll go straight to his reviews and a few other people, but his are definitely the best.
Yes, hands down. So yeah, he'll be joining us for Demon Witch Child next episode.
That's exciting.
Yes. All right. If you are not already, please give us a follow on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd under the username Also Watched. You can follow my other podcast, Customers Also Watched, on Twitter at CAW Podcast or Facebook or Instagram under Customers Also Watched. And Lance, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at L Scheibe on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd.
Well, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will see you back in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye, everybody.